It's time once again for Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. This is a weekly podcast featuring Adam Awson, writer for the weekly publication Current in Carmel. You can check out his writing at currentincarmel.com. My name is Larry Lannan. I write the local news blog about Fishers, Indiana at larryinfishers.com. This week, Adam and I talk about different films due to his scheduling, mainly his honeymoon trip to Italy. Our guest this week is Greg Sorvig from the Heartland Film Festival, and we have a lot to talk with him about. With all that in mind, let's get started. We're normally at Donatello's Italian Restaurant in downtown Carmel, but not this week. And the reason we're not is that there's a huge arts festival downtown, and we're not absolutely sure that we could get everybody there. But it's a busy time in downtown Carmel the day we record this. And Adam is back, our world traveler. He's returned from Italy in his honeymoon, so great to see you again. We missed you last week.
Well, thank you. I heard you guys did it. I listened to it. You guys did a great job while I was gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was able to get a couple of local guys. Ashton Wolf, who used to work in Hollywood, and Doug is a film buff, and he had his favorite films of the 70s. I think the 70s sometimes gets trashed as an era of film. I think the top films are some of the best. So I'm glad we were able to talk a little bit about that. But first of all, let's talk about your trip. So can you have a conversation with an Italian today?
Oh, you know what? I was learning my Italian before I went. I thought it'd be kind of fun to be able to talk a little bit, but everyone speaks English so much, whether it's waiters, hotel concierge, everyone does. So there wasn't tons of opportunities. There's some times where I did it where I didn't need to, just to have fun, where I'd talk to the waiter and order something or talk to someone. But I did feel like when I did use Italian, they did appreciate it. And so maybe I got a little better service at a restaurant because I showed I wasn't your typical tourist. I'm still a tourist, but I was very appreciative of their culture and I had a good time.
As someone whose family runs an Italian restaurant in Carmel, I think you've mentioned a few of these things on Facebook, but I'll give you a chance to tell our listeners. Now, tell us what you we'll talk more about this later in the second part of our podcast. But just generally, what did you learn about the Italian version of restaurants?
Yeah, there were some things that were different. People always joke like, oh, did you get some recipes to bring back home? And there are some things, obviously, we'll do with some specials and stuff. Actually, kind of reinforced my idea that my dad's cooking really is top-notch, even on an international scale. His tomato sauce, I think, is one of the best. But we had some great meals. I went to a steakhouse in Florence and got some bistecca fiorentina that was fantastic. But you almost, if you go there, my recommendation is go on TripAdvisor and search out what's good, because if you just try to find something on the street, you may run into a lot of touristy places. Mm-hmm. And some of the touristy places, if you see with pictures of food outside, that's usually a sign that maybe it's not as authentic. A couple things you notice when you go to the truly authentic places, they don't open till like 7 p.m. Now, the touristy places will stay open all day, but the authentic places, they're open from like noon to 3 and 7 to midnight. They eat much later in Italy. In the United States, I think, you know, you'll find people want to, they eat at 5 or 6 or sometimes 7, but you don't. Our restaurant, we don't get a lot of people coming in to eat at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. There, it's very common. Then little funny things, like they won't cut the pizza for you, slice it. You have to use your own knife and fork. So it was a good time. The flight was about 10 hours. There's a six-hour time difference. There were some people freaking out because their movie screen wasn't working. I did bring a book.
Did your movie screen work, though?
I did. Okay. I watched one movie, even though it was only 10 hours there and back. I didn't watch a lot of movies. I read the book for It, the Stephen King, because the movie came out like the day before we left, so I didn't have a chance to see it. I'll see it tomorrow. It's getting great reviews. But I thought it'd be fun to read the book before I went. Now, the book is 1,150 pages. It is probably the longest book I've ever read in my life. And there are some parts that are really kind of weird in it. But I enjoyed it. It was kind of fun reading something that long. And when you had 10 hours one way, 10 hours one way back, plus the connecting flight, sitting in the airport, I had plenty of time to finish that book. I did watch one film on the plane that a lot of people have not heard of that I'll give a little recommendation to. I think it's available for rental. It is called Kedi, K-E-D-I. It is a documentary about cats roaming the streets of Istanbul. And it is subtitled. The narrators, all the subjects they talk to, there really isn't narration. It's all subjects they talk to are speaking in Turkish. You really don't even need a lot of audio to understand the film. What's interesting is, so there's hundreds of thousands of cats that roamed the metropolis for basically thousands of years. And the film is more than just for cat lovers. It kind of shows how these animals wander in and out of people's lives and kind of connect with people. There's a lot of people who talk about how they wish their lives were a little more freer, like these cats. And there's beautiful cinematography. It's pretty short. It's about an hour and 15 minutes, but it was a very feel-good movie that kind of made you think about things in a different way. And then after we watched that, Nicole watched it too, separately on her screen. And then when we got there, she kept her eye out for stray cats. And Italy did not have as many stray cats as Turkey does, but she was very excited when a cat wandered into our hotel breakfast area one morning, and then she, of course, wanted to pet the cat. She wasn't annoyed at all. She was excited.
Well, you wouldn't see a cat in an American restaurant because
they would freak out.
The health regulations wouldn't allow it. But in Europe and Italy, I understand it's a different attitude. The pets are in the restaurants. The cats are there. Different way of doing business, huh?
And it was very rare. We saw it once or twice. Okay, and right. I guess in Istanbul, it's everywhere.
Okay.
But it was, yeah, I enjoyed that film on the plane, and I do recommend that one.
Before we get to the movie I'll talk about here, I just wanted to ask you what you saw in Italy that really stands out in your mind now that the trip is over. What stands out in your mind as far as what you saw or experienced there?
I really enjoy history, and maybe I'll just tie this into movies too. There were some things I saw where I wanted to go watch movies about the history of those things. For example, in the Vatican, I kind of wanted to rewatch like the Da Vinci Code movies or in Florence because you saw all the cool architecture and the history behind all that. So we did do the tour of the Vatican. And God, there's so many stories in there that could be good movies themselves about some of the popes that back in the day, the Pope was almost the king of Italy because Italy wasn't united as a country until kind of the 1800s. But, you know, there was a Pope who had wives and kids, even though they're not supposed to, kind of hidden. I think that's what the Showtime show, the Borgias, or B-O-R-G-I, that was based on that. And even kind of the new HBO show, The Young Pope.
The Young Pope,
yes. Kind of hit on some of that, too. The history in Florence, just kind of looking at kind of all the mysteries they keep discovering, these archaeologists, and then kind of the history that gets lost. We went to the Colosseum, which of course reminded me a lot of Gladiator, the Ridley Scott film. But you know, most of the Colosseum is fallen down. You know, how did that happen? Well, there was an earthquake, and why didn't it survive the earthquake? Well, years after they stopped using it for these games, they decided to take the metal pillars out of the Colosseum and use that for other construction projects. So, you know, they didn't have the same reverence for the history. I guess it wasn't old enough back then. They took out the metal pillars and then boom, her earthquake happens and one of the most iconic buildings in history, half of it comes down.
But is there enough of it that you can get a feel for what it might have been like?
Okay. Absolutely. But I, you know, it's kind of funny that we talk movie podcasts, and the reason I do like movies, I do think it does inform things about history in the world, and then you see something in real life, whether, you know, you watch a Woody Allen film set in Rome, or, you know, the old classic movies where there's gondola riders, you know, through the streets of Venice, and then you see those things in person, I think it kind of resonates with you. So not to tie everything to films, but it is a film podcast, and I think that when you kind of go on these trips, it kind of reminds you of those things you saw on a film, and now you get to see it in real life.
Okay, well, good to have you back. I'm glad you and Nicole, I had a chance to meet Nicole for the first time today. We won't explain why.
Well, I locked my keys in my car. That's okay. I'm okay. I do things like that sometimes.
So I got to see your lovely wife. You've been married, not what, 2 weeks now, right?
Yeah, September 3rd.
Okay. So it was good to meet her, unfortunately, under those circumstances. One thing that I'll talk about, and I sometimes you see a film, and you and I hadn't had a chance to really set a film up because you were just returned this week from Italy, so we decided just sort of wing it. And I decided to see a film just on television that I had not seen the first time around last year, and that's Hidden Figures. I assume you've already seen it.
Yeah, I saw all the Best Picture nominees prior to the ceremony.
Okay. So I look at this, and I must tell you that in January of this year. I don't really have a bucket list. One thing I've always wanted to do was to see the 24-hour sports car race at Daytona in late January. So I went there, got my tickets on a Thursday night, and had nothing to do Friday because the race was Saturday, and decided to go visit the Kennedy Space Center. And I, being a kid who grew up in grade school when the space program really started and remembered all these things happened. Of course, we didn't know everything that was going on. We just knew what the public relations machine was churning out. But this story of Hidden Figures is a story that just needed to be told. These three African-American women with incredible talent who were never able, at least at first, to show what they could do. And all three of them made a major contribution to the space program. This was set in Virginia, not in Florida, but there was a lot of the math and a lot of the engineering was done in the Washington, D.C. area. I'm there in Virginia. And there was one character in there that I don't think John Glenn would have ever gotten into orbit and back had it not been for her mathematical calculations. I think Octavia Spencer became a movie star in this film. She was absolutely outstanding, but all the acting was so good. So I think this is a film. I did not have a chance to read the book, but I've known people who have, and they raved about the book and thought the film was a pretty good representation of how the book tried to tell the story. So I have to rave about this. If you have not seen Hidden Figures, you know, go on a pay channel or stream it or rent it or whatever you want to do with it. Find a way to watch that film. And for those who have seen it, I'm sure you know. And it was nominated for an Oscar, and deservingly so, should have been. So that was my film, and it was a great experience. I'm sorry I missed it last year. I was just busy at the time that it was out in the theaters and never got the chance to see it. So Hidden Figures is received all the adulation last year. It deserved every bit of it. Any comment on that?
Oh, that was a great film. I thought that basically, like, Taraji P. Henson, she could have been nominated for Best mm-hmm. Actress, and a lot of people thought that was a snub. I don't know who they would have replaced. I mean, I can't remember who all was nominated, but she was fantastic. And Octavia Spencer, previous Oscar winner for The Help, shows that she was not a one-trick pony in that, you know.
She became a star in that film, I think, really, for on her own right.
Yeah,
that's true. That she was great in The Help, but this was the film that really, I think,
she's fantastic. I think it's a film that without the casting, it might not have been as good. Sometimes you get into these movies that, while they're inspirational and show an important piece of history, they can look a little cookie cutter. They can look a little by the numbers. Oh, here's the part where they tell off the boss and they have the struggle. And some of these biopics, especially about films, while you have complete admiration for the subjects that are being portrayed on film, sometimes the films themselves don't do it justice. I think there are a few things that had this film really well going for it. Again, great acting. It was a good running time, wasn't too long, didn't overdo it. But also, the title itself says Hidden Figures. They didn't pick a story we had heard again and again and again. Nothing against, say, like, you know, they did that film about Jackie Robinson. You know, Chadwick Boseman did a great job playing him, kind of a breakout role for him. Now he's doing a lot of films. He's playing Thurgood Marshall in a movie coming out soon that looks pretty good. But the reason that film didn't resonate as much for me was I had heard the story many, many times. There was the Jackie Robinson story that was, I think, a made-for-TV movie or something years ago. We had seen the play in elementary school. We went down to Madam C.J. Walker Theater and saw that. So when you see a story again and again and again, even if they do a fantastic job, it's hard to have the same impact. But Hidden Figures was a story that a lot of people, when they saw it, said, how come I had never heard of this before?
Well, there's one part of that that I do remember, being 66 years old. That's the old Jim Crow South. And Virginia, although not in the Deep South, was a part of the South, and Virginia still had Jim Crow laws. And that film illustrated, as best as I could ever see, how much America suffered for the Jim Crow laws. People like these women would have never had the chance, and they had to fight for the chance to get to where they were as it was, and it was still a bad, I mean, the race relations were still backward at that time, but at least things had changed enough where they could battle for some attention and actually get somewhere. But think about all the people in the history of America from the Civil War up to the 60s who never had the chance to shine like these three women did, because they never had the chance because of the Jim Crow laws. And the one section of the film where one of the characters was gone for several minutes every day because she couldn't find a white restroom in that building. She had to walk 40 minutes, I think it was, a long way, on the part of the complex to use the so-called colored restroom. And it was Kevin Costner's character, who was the director of the program, who really didn't even know this was going on. And when he found out, he took a big old instrument and tore down the signs that said colored restrooms and said, from now on, we just have restrooms.
You know? I think there was a double whammy in the film, because not only did they deal with racism, but sexism as well. And I thought that was almost as prominent in the film, too. If you look at the character played by Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory, yes. I don't think his character was racist. I think his character was probably more sexist.
Reflective of the era, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think his character was probably more sexist, where he thought women couldn't do the job. I didn't, you know, it was nothing against a black person.
It was an African-American woman, but you're a woman. Why in the world would you want to be an engineer?
Exactly.
And there were almost no women engineers at the time.
So you have both the idea of, there's complete racism at that time in history. There's still racism today, but obviously a lot worse back then. Then you have the added sexism, obviously a lot worse in the 60s, still prevalent today. And then Taraji P. Henson's character was a single mother on top of all of that.
Yes.
So, I mean, think of all the single mothers nowadays would have to juggle raising a child and the demands of a job that you have to work twice as hard just to get ahead, and then on top of that, try to raise a kid. I mean,
and there was a subplot and a really neat love story in the subplot. So I think we both agree it's a great film. If you have not seen it, Adam and I would recommend you stream it, rent it, do whatever you have to do to take a look at it. It's certainly out there now. We're going to end a little bit early. We have a very terrific guest coming up, and we want to make sure we have plenty of time for you to listen to him, because the Heartland Film Festival is coming up. And it is just an amazing lineup this year. So anything to add before we go, Adam?
No, but if you are interested in the Heartland Film Festival, please check out their website for their full lineup. And I will have a few copies of their kind of booklet showing all the films available at Donatello's Italian Restaurant. You could stop by and pick up one.
Thanks, Adam. We're going to be talking to Greg Sorvig here in just a moment from the Heartland Film Festival. You're listening to Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. We normally record this podcast at Donatello's Italian Restaurant, 9 West Main Street in Carmel. However, a big art show is going on in downtown Carmel, and that led to a change in our recording session. This week, we're at the Fishers Public Library. The Fishers Library has a special event scheduled just before Halloween. It's called Ghost Hunting in Indiana. It's aimed at those 11 years of age and older. Nicole and Michael Kabrowski of UnseenPress.com will present some of the most exciting and perplexing paranormal activity and investigations in central Indiana. This one-hour event is set for Thursday, October 26th at 7 p.m. You must register to attend. Contact the library for more information and registration by calling 317-579-0307. Now, on to this week's guest.
And our guest today, we'll have a lot to talk about, is Greg Sorvig. He is the director of film marketing, film programming and marketing at Heartland Film Festival, which is, of course, is the largest in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, largest and longest running now, 26th year.
And he's got a lot of they had the big announcement about a week or two ago, mm-hmm. where they announced their lineup. It's bigger than before. Usually there's tons and tons of movies, but this year there's even more movies. And Greg is actually a Hamilton County resident. Mm-hmm. Him and his wife and his daughter live in Carmel, and he's been to my restaurant, and it's very nice. And I got to tell a quick thing about how nice Greg is before we get into it. So me and Greg went and saw Dunkirk together at the IMAX theater. And, you know, I was like, oh, you want to – Nicole's not interested. My wife's not interested in seeing mm-hmm. this. Did you want to go to the movie? He said, yeah, sure. So me, trying to be a good friend, I buy the tickets online ahead of time because we saw it at the State Museum. And you want to have, you know, good seats so mm-hmm. you can see what's going on. So I pick out some good seats. We get there. We get into the theater. And we sit down in our seats. And somebody walks up to us and they say, hey, I think you're in our seats because they're reserved seats. And I said, well, no. It says right here. No, that says Saturday. Today is Sunday. So I bought tickets for the wrong day.
Oh, no.
They let me in anyways. Oh. So then we're trying to, like, shuffle around, go from mm-hmm. seat to seat to, like, find one that hopefully someone's not already reserved for. And, like, four or five times we sat in a seat and someone was like, yeah, you're in our seat. So we had to keep moving around.
And in an IMAX theater, that does make a difference where you sit.
Oh, yeah. There's long rows.
And
yeah.
Greg was nice enough to not roll his eyes at me too much and be like, oh, God, Adam, what are you doing here? But, I mean, hey, these are the kind of things that I accidentally do. This is talking from a guy who just locked his keys in his car a minute ago. Yeah. So
we didn't have to stand in a wheelchair spot, so, you know, we were all good. And the funny thing is that they scanned your ticket. So I'm guessing the guy was just giving you a nice benefit of the doubt. Didn't want to embarrass you too. When you checked in, it was like, oh, he'll figure it out. So
yeah,
they let us in.
It all worked out, but it was a little awkward for a minute. But
we still had good seats, and I'm glad we saw it in the film format at the IMAX downtown. So
I mean, I saw it in regular standard format, and it blew me away. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what it must have been like for you two.
Yeah, and I was like, I know I saw The Force Awakens there too, and you know, there's a couple scenes in the true IMAX full format. And so much of the movie for Dunkirk was filmed in that format. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, a couple scenes might look cool, but it's like, it was most of the movie. It looked phenomenal.
Oh yeah. And I think it would really increase the enjoyment. It was funny. We were just got back from my honeymoon, and there was the 10-hour flight to Italy where you have the little movie screens in the back of the chair. And I see some guy in front of me watching Avatar on his little airplane movie screen. I'm like, you know what? That film is not really meant to be watched on a grainy airport, you know. It's all visuals. The story is okay, but, you know, so there's certain films you do need to see on the big screen.
I don't recommend many IMAX 3D movies, but Avatar was one that looked fantastic.
Oh, IMAX 3D, yeah.
I was thinking about this, Adam. I have to ask you. I know maybe if your wife, it's every girl's dream to have some big story tale, you know, wedding. Mm-hmm. But for you, being part of an Italian restaurant, has it been your dream for the honeymoon to go eat Italian food in Italy?
Oh, fun. It was fun, but inevitably everyone kept asking, "Oh, did you get some ideas for the restaurant?
Yeah.
Did
you?"
And there's two things. One, there was things like for maybe specials or for a wine dinner. Mm-hmm. This would be a good dish to try out that maybe we've done before, but you kind of get inspired.
Right.
But a lot of times, like, there are things that aren't going to fly in Indiana.
Sure.
Like, I don't think. I mean, obviously there are very fancy, more foodie restaurants where you can do it, but my customers, like, I don't know if they're going to have octopus salad or cuttlefish with squid ink pasta. There are plenty of places that will do that, but I just, you know. But there's funny, I did a post where I said, there's three things I noticed in Italian restaurants in Italy that will not work here in Indiana. One, we won't cut the pizzas for you. You have to cut the pizza crust yourself. The good restaurants don't open until 7 p.m., I know that's, you know, my elderly customers who like to eat at 5 would not be happy about that.
I'm an older guy, and that would be way past my
head. Oh, yeah, yeah.
and then the every time charging for bread and water thing. I think some people would. But we got to get back to the top. We kind of got derailed right from the beginning. Greg, tell us about this big announcement that you had with some of the big films. And I think we'll just, I guess, start off with the highlight, the opening ceremony. You've got LBJ.
Right.
And a film that I think Larry was excitedly talking about mm-hmm. even before
a couple
the
months ago, yeah.
Yeah, so last week we had, every year we do an announcement party because there's so many things to announce. And this year, last year we had 138 movies from all around the world. This year we have 213 movies. So an expansion in that regard, mostly feature films, which is crazy. You think we have the same amount of time slots, about 290 to 300, but we're just playing movies less times. So most movies are playing, if there's a finalist up for the grand prize, maybe four times, official selections two times, and if something's a special presentation from a Hollywood studio, maybe a time or two tops. So we had to fit all of those in as well, more of the industry standard as well. So we did that. But yeah, so our 26th anniversary, our motto really are story-driven films that do more than entertain. You're not going to see a lot of exploitative stuff, more experimental stuff. So really, these films are going to impact you in some form or fashion when you walk out of the theater, and that's what we're excited about. So the stars aligned. Rob Reiner actually came here years ago. I've been with Heartland 5 years, so it was right before my time, with kind of a family film called Flipped. I was down at the Hilbert Circle Theater downtown, and it was a huge production. People still talk about that movie. So we're excited to have Rob back with a film that's a little bit different. It is rated R, and it's mostly because of language, and I think that's the thing I was surprised about. So it's about LBJ, Lyndon B. Johnson. And growing up, you always hear about JFK. You know his story. You know the things he fought for, he believed in. And you know LBJ took the reins and became the president. But you don't know. I never even knew what he sounded like. I never knew he had a Southern drawl. I never knew the things he really fought for. I knew that there was maybe some resistance to the civil rights movement and passing things too. But this movie dives into that. And stars Woody Harrelson, Jennifer Jason Leigh as his wife. Bill Pullman's in the film. And Bill Pullman this year has secured the trifecta at Heartland. He's an opening night. He's in a special presentation film, The Ballad of Lefty Brown, a straight-ahead Western from A24, which is a fantastic distributor. And then he's in a movie called Walking Out, which was at Sundance, and we're thrilled to have it as an official selection at this year's festival, too. But it'll be October 12th, a Thursday night at the IMA, which is now the Indianapolis Museum of Art at Newfields, since they've rebranded. So that's
no
the
longer,
full official.
No longer Old Fields.
No Old Fields allowed. Only the Newfields,
yeah. In case people don't know how that name came about, it was known as Old Fields
really?
For as long as I can remember, and the idea was to change the image. And I don't have a problem with the name changes. People need to understand they're the same.
Sure.
The old fields are now the new fields. But I have a question for you on LBJ.
Because yeah, yeah.
I'm the old guy in the room, so I remember LBJ.
Sure.
And, of course, I was a young teenager as Vietnam War was starting to heat up. And I remember the civil rights, the whole battles, the many battles over civil rights. What people don't know about LBJ, and I'm curious as how Rob Reiner handles this in the film, is that Johnson was always a segregationist.
Right.
When he was a member of Congress, he was from Texas, and that was a southern state at that time. And it wasn't until he became president that he began to be a champion of civil rights. In fact, the civil rights movement thought they were going to take a step backward when Kennedy was killed and
sure.
Johnson came in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a terrific part of the story about how this man transformed himself into a segregationist, into one of the greatest champions of civil rights in the history of America.
Yeah, and that's really the point of history. It's not this far-flung boyhood to a deathbed type situation, kind of similar to Lincoln that Spielberg did. So it's a point of time right before JFK's assassination, up through the passing of the civil rights movement. So you see that transformation, you see that change throughout the film, and you realize why he did what he did. Because I think it's the easiest thing to just go with the flow of what society thinks is right. And now we're in a wild time right now with different points of view and ways of thinking about different groups and races and ethnicities and stuff too. So I think it's very timely as well. So Rob Reiner will be here. We haven't mentioned that.
Yes,
for the Q&A, and he's going to get our Pioneering Spirit Lifetime Achievement Award as well.
And I was going to ask about that, because one of the questions I would have for him is, why did you decide to take on this subject at this particular time? So I'm sure he'll address that when he's there.
Yeah, definitely. And the movie premiered at Toronto last year. So that was before we had a new president, too. So I'm sure maybe the reasons for making the film, and then obviously he's a very outspoken guy, so maybe things have his commentary will change a bit. And it'll be interesting. So definitely be there for the Q&A.
Yeah, have something topical to say.
Yeah. I saw the trailer of the film, and Woody Harrelson, even just in the brief part of the trailer, seemed like he really kind of got – he pretty much impressed me there too. I wondered how he would do, because I was – so blown away by Bryan Cranston's performance,
right,
which he did on Broadway and in the I think he won an Emmy for that, the HBO film.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to say. I did appreciate there were even a few moments in the trailer that I'm like, okay, I know this is probably going to be accurate, because they had him sitting on the toilet talking to his staff, which LBJ was famous for.
Yeah.
And then they put in kind of the conflict between the Kennedys and LBJ after Kennedy's death, because, I mean, the country needed to move on. He needed to take the mantle, but there were some in the Kennedy camp, whether it's Jackie or RFK, who thought that he was too eager to put his hand on that Bible and swear in, and that the nation needed a moment. So I don't know. I think it should be interesting, and I think this is a really great opportunity for people who haven't been to Heartland events, too, because it's the opening night. There are very few tickets left, so if you're interested, you need to kind of jump on.
Yeah, definitely. And we always, again, if you don't go, you don't know is our motto. We've been around 26 years. There's still people. And it's not just Heartland. There are other arts institutions throughout. We don't have a huge film movement or film establishment around Indiana, and that's really changing. Indie Film Fest has been around now for more than a decade. More film festivals are popping up. I think we don't have tax incentives, but there's a huge movement. That's why you have an Indiana Spotlight program. We're going to have a panel about making movies in Indiana as well. But yeah, definitely come to the festival. Don't feel like you are invited. If anyone's listening, people are like, oh, I didn't know how to buy tickets. I wasn't invited. You aren't invited. You're officially invited today at Hamilton County at the movies.
And
I'm inviting you.
And this is one of the special ones, too, where... You know, it's not, people think of sometimes, you know, like, hey, you're going on like a first date with a girl or something like that. Oh, a movie is not a good choice because you're sitting in the silence. Well, this is more than just a movie, because you actually have the after party, too, with live music with Josh Kaufman, who has that Indiana connection there, too. And you actually have a lot of events where it's more than just sitting and watching the movie. There's Q&As, there's parties afterwards,
panels,
there's these kind of ways. So you have a lot of fun ways for... the audience to not only talk to each other and maybe ask how they enjoyed the film, but to interact with some people who were involved in making a lot of these movies.
Yeah, we had a musical act after opening night with Jessica Biel last year, and there were people that came just for that, too. So come for Rob Reiner, stay for the voice winner, Josh Kaufman.
I'm a big fan of Doc. Yes, I'm sure that's all a big part of the party. And I appreciate your inviting me to your opening, but I wasn't able to go that night when you made the announcement. But I'm sure that was a big party, too.
Definitely. It was fantastic. And that was the first... I mean, people are excited. They don't know anything, and people getting guides. I mean, this is worth its weight in gold, really, too. And it's, as you see, it's big. And we'll go through this page by page for you.
Yes, he's showing us the brochure. It's really a book.
Yeah,
which
someone compared
it
to National Geographic this year. it's perfect bound, and years past was stapled, and it was like bursting at the seams. So
I could call it a phone book, but we don't have those anymore.
Yeah, and here's the neat thing: if you're looking in the back, there's actually a pull-out guide. So it has that sticky stuff like you get on a thing in the mail. And then it has day by day, so you can circle what you want. It has the page number for the film, and so you can kind of have that as your supplementary piece and plot out your entire time. But yeah, with dates, I mean, we have so many movies. We had more filmmakers and cast and crew than movies last year, about 150 filmmakers, cast and crew, about 138 movies. We're expecting more this year. But hey, if your date, your spouse doesn't know that all these people are coming in, you can just waltz up. It's very intimate. Like, hey, I know this guy, and I'm going to introduce you and buy him a beer.
I just have one question here, because documentaries are one of my favorite types of films.
Sure.
And I'm really fascinated by several of them. One that I really caught my eye is one about Alan Ladd.
Yes.
Alan Ladd is you would not know who he is if you love movies and didn't understand the backstory.
Yeah.
Talk about Alan Ladd and this documentary film.
Yeah, it's neat, because there's a couple different people that I've talked with, other local reviewers, and they're like, after I saw this announcement, I saw that guy in all these bonus features for my Star Wars Blu-rays and DVDs and stuff, too. So Alan Ladd, our closing night movie, October 22nd at AMC Castleton, is going to take over multiple screens. It's called Laddie, the Man Behind the Movies. So Alan Ladd Sr. was almost an Indiana Jones-looking leading man back in the day of Golden Age of Hollywood. And the movie talks about Alan Ladd Jr. He had these kids. Basically, he didn't have a lot of time for his kids. So he would go theater palaces and see 20 movies a week almost. Like he was almost raised by the movies to an extent too. Although he had this famous dad, so those neat connections. But he, I think it's over 150 some Oscar nominations, dozens of wins. You haven't heard of this guy because he was humble, wears his heart on his sleeve. And I think that's what I saw about really embodiment of Heartland in the Midwest and stuff too, this inspiring story. But he's the most famous, I guess most heralded studio executive you've never heard about. So I'm wearing my Star Wars t-shirt here too. It's the 40th anniversary of Star Wars this year, and also 30th anniversary of Princess Bride, which we're showing with Rob Reiner in attendance too. So neat anniversaries this year. But he is the studio exec that greenlit Star Wars, the original Star Wars, working with George Lucas. He believed in George Lucas. And the Fox board wanted to cut funding multiple times throughout production, and he's the guy who kept it going. So if you think
about... At that time, that was a very expensive film.
Definitely, and they had to go back and do expensive reshoots in Tunisia and things too. So the fact that they believed in it, then he was along with the rest of the films. But he also was responsible for... he worked alongside the people for Alien, and the documentary talks about him actually working with Ridley Scott to change Ripley to a female from a male. So he helped launch Sigourney Weaver's career, Ridley Scott, his career, and he also worked on Blade Runner, the new movie's coming out too. Local Connections, Breaking Away, he was involved in that film. He was responsible as well on the team to... The Rocky Horror Picture Show, when it came out, wasn't uber successful, but it found its footing in those midnight screenings, and he helped... Folks were like, hey, this was successful, let's try it. And he helped launch that and go into those realms too. He was part of Young Frankenstein with Mel Brooks. So he's really had his hand in all these different things. And I won't go into all of them too, but it's fascinating what he's done.
And this is a documentary story as told by his daughter.
His daughter, Alan Ladd-Jones. Yeah, mm-hmm. So she will be here. We're going to honor Alan Ladd or Laddie with the Lifetime Achievement Award as well. He's 82. He's had some health issues, so he can't make it. But Amanda, his daughter, and the director of the film will be here. And we might have some Star Wars characters hanging out, too. We can't say anything officially, you know, but unofficially here today, I will say maybe Obi-Wan might be there. You never know.
Great idea, because we mentioned Star Wars. Yeah. I want to get a little off topic from the festival. You're one of the bigger Star Wars fans, I
think. Okay, yeah, I'll take that, yeah.
So, I mean, sure. I don't know who's the biggest, but you're one of the big right. ones. I remember we went and saw Dunkirk. You saw... picked out some sort of Star Wars reference that was way over my head.
Yeah, Bella Teak. And so the guy who is one of the two groups in The Force Awakens when Han Solo is there, they have the Wrath Tars, those crazy, I call them space meatballs with the tentacles. There's Bella Teak, who's kind of the Scottish dude.
Yeah, and he was in the group. The film.
Yeah, so he's the guy.
You notice that I would completely over my head.
Yeah.
So obviously the Alan Ladd thing is pretty exciting for you too, but mm-hmm. quick question.
Yeah.
What do you think about J.J. Abrams taking over Episode 9?
I'm excited. Again, there's been turmoil, it sounds like. And again, I think a lot of movie sites and the internet, you can easily jump to conclusions. And it's neat being connected with folks who are involved in the movie. Mike Quinn, who played Nian Numb. A lot of people thought it was Nian Numb, but it is... officially Nian Numb. He was in Return of the Jedi, the co-pilot with Lando. Now he's been in The Force Awakens and other movies. And he's been a puppeteer with the Muppets and other fantastic projects. Following him, he did this post of how excited he was to have JJ back. I think JJ gets it. They needed somebody who would be trusted in the role too. But it just sounds like I have so much respect for Kathleen Kennedy. She knows what she wants. And I think, again, it's all hearsay. We live in Indiana. I'm not out in the industry. But a lot of the things you see online is like, you know, they have 30 years of Star Wars movies to make, starting with The Force Awakens. So, you know, you got to do it right. There's going to be some different things you got to do. You got to work with the directors. So I think the approach to do some new up-and-coming directors that are maybe more auteurs to an extent within the system maybe wasn't working per se. So I think they're going back to the folks they trusted. And I think a lot of people rail on J.J. and The Force Awakens. And I can say this too.
Force Awakens.
The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, this is so similar. Like, I think the joke now is like, oh, is there going to be another Death Star? And that this movie is going to be like all the same story structure from Return of the Jedi. But that movie had to reintroduce Star Wars to a new generation, something old but something familiar, and it did a great job. I love it every time I see it again.
Before we get back to the festival, the thing I liked about Force Awakens was when I thought going into it, all I would care about were Han Solo and Chewbacca and Princess Leia, mm-hmm. Leia, and I would not care about any of the new characters,
right.
Which you see that. For example, when they did the new Indiana Jones, the fourth one with Shia LaBeouf in it, mm-hmm. I did not care about his character. If he would have gotten eaten by a pit of spiders, yeah. I would have been fine because I didn't care about the new characters. But with right. Force Awakens, I instantly liked...
Mutt Williams, correct? Was that his character's name?
Yeah,
he Mutt, and he's not
name.
Coming back, according
yeah,
to...
And there was a theory that they were going to have him spin off and be the new Indiana Jones, like for 5. Thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But with Force Awakens, the casting was so perfect that I feel like they created new characters sure. that you really did like. All right, get back to the festival.
Yeah, definitely.
So, a documentary that a lot of people have seen already, it's been out for a while, but you're going to do a special presentation of, is Life Itself.
Right.
And you've got Chaz Ebert coming as sure. part of that. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and we never got to screen it. It's from 2014. Magnolia is the distribution company behind the film. But, I mean, if you're a film aficionado, or even not, I mean, I grew up watching Siskel and Ebert on TV, and I always look for the two thumbs up. So even as a young movie lover, I was like, yes, I got a thumbs up. That's really cool. And watching the show and watching the banter back and forth, it was pretty hilarious. But Roger Ebert is really the epitome, the gold standard, I think, when it comes to film critics over the years, too. So this film, we're showing it, and Chaz Ebert, who's married to Roger Ebert, and she's an amazing film critic in her own right, still runs RogerEbert.com. She is coming to do an intimate Q&A, but she's also going to moderate a film critics panel that same evening, October 13th, Friday the 13th. But we're going to have Klaus Eder here. He's the one of the heads of the International Critics Association. And that's, FIPRESI is kind of what they're known as. So that's huge. So, I mean, we're trying more and more to bring the industry to Heartland, into the Midwest and Indiana. And he's head of that organization. So we're going to have him as well. Christopher Lloyd, who is on Indie Style, part of the Film Yap. He has reviews that are syndicated all across the United States as well. And Richard Probst with the IndependentCritic.com. And they're both actually, Christopher and Richard are both jurors this year too for us too. So
I met Chris Lloyd and interviewed him. He is a great film critic and knows a lot about the film industry. But you took me away because my next question was going to be about the film critics panel. But I grew up, and I actually didn't grow up, I lived in Columbus, Indiana for the late 70s, early 80s. And before this TV show was even on in Indianapolis, I found this thing called sneak previews on public TV before they were on commercial television. What Siskel and Ebert did for me was open my eyes, because I always loved movies, but I never thought about, I've seen a couple of foreign films, but foreign films, certainly they turned me on to that, and documentaries, but really oddball films that you have trouble finding. My Dinner with Andre was one that they opened up for me, and I watched this film and thought, wow, this is really different. I never would have seen this film if Siskel and Ebert hadn't introduced me to that film.
Right.
And I think that's why I got more distribution, because the two of them had recommended it so much.
Sure.
So my question to you is, how are you this panel that you put together, a great group of people, what do you think people will get out of it? Are people maybe going to figure out how to be a film critic themselves? Because with the internet and podcasting, more people are film critics than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, and there's the backlash against Rotten Tomatoes now in the studios. Some of them embracing change, some of them not so much so, and maybe blaming Rotten Tomatoes for that and other things too. But yeah, I mean, now you can look at a number. You can look at a green tomato that's rotten, or you can look at a fresh, nice, ripe red tomato and decide if you're going to like the movie from there. So I think maybe people don't generally go and read a full review anymore. But and that's different for me. If I like to go into a movie not knowing what to expect, like I did with Mother this past week. And I was glad. I heard there's buzz both ways, but I didn't want to know more than that. And then that's when I like to read the reviews afterwards.
I like to read reviews once I've already written my own or already seen it. Then I'll look at Rotten Tomatoes and I'll look at some of my favorite film critics. But I try not to prejudice myself too much before I see a film. Others are the other way around. They want to know what others are saying and then go in and try to evaluate it. But I always like to go in thinking, I'd rather not know. I know it's an important film. That's why I'm seeing it. But I would rather just make my own decision, and then I'll see what others have said.
It's neat to see, somebody I trust likes it or doesn't like it, and then you can say, but I don't. For me, I don't know if people have a gold standard for a certain critic and say, you know what, I'm not going to see the movie because so-and-so didn't like it.
Now, I saw that you kind of fell for that a little bit with Wonder Woman. You read some of the the hype surrounding it, and you felt like you kind of got let down a little bit.
Yes, okay, so I will put the disclaimer out there. It was a good film for the superhero genre, especially. And my thing too is all about the genre and credibility within the genre and the acting and stuff too. But you would have thought this was the film form of the second coming of, you know, whatever. I mean, it just seemed like this was, holy crap, this was the best movie that's ever made.
If you didn't read all that, you would have had a different.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So my initial post was not, I know it ruffled some feathers. Yeah. It was not, this was a bad movie. It was just, oh wow. Like I was on cloud nine up here, like, I don't know what I was expecting. And that's the thing, too. And I think,
So what's up with Rotten Tomatoes? Because right now they had a list of the top movies of all time, according to Tomometer, you know, whatever they call it, the tomato meter, Tomometer. And there was a lot of movies in the last 2 years, films that were good. Like, we both liked Get Out.
Mm-hmm.
Is Get Out a top 10 movie of all time? No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the best of this year, I would say.
Oh, sure, yes. But what's going on with their system? It seems like things are getting way out of whack. Do they not know whether to put something to be a red or a green tomato? Or
I'm not sure. And
you're
think,
smarter than me. That's why I'm asking.
Honestly, okay, I'll put it this way too, because IMDb, a lot of it too, they have their top list, and I always refer to that too, because there's always a fun post. I think there was a post on social media recently, some of the local film critics, like, what are some of the like top movies you've never seen? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to even remember, go back some of the films I haven't seen. Like, I haven't... I'll go back to this too. I'm really not off and stuff too. But ultimately, I think that rating is voted by IMDb users by that ranking. So then it automatically generates if a film goes up too. But I don't know if maybe there's more emphasis, again, on the tomato score, the thermometer, than there has been in the past. So maybe it's just... It's like inflation. It's like, oh yeah, well, these movies made this much. Technically, they're the top grossing, but if you look for inflation, and maybe there's that adjustment we don't have with the scores in years past and the sheer number of reviews that are coming in. That
do you ever see it was years ago where someone got in trouble for, you know, and they don't do it as much. They would have the little blurbs at the bottom saying, you know, great film, and they would put the critic's name at the bottom. Two things they got in trouble for. One, they found people who would selectively, like...
Peter Travers was one of two that was...
Yeah.
Context is
they would be
is
like,
important.
Great movie, ... It was not A. Like, they would basically really selectively pick stuff.
Yeah.
Or the other was they found one film who just made up critics who didn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, said Steve Burns of the Wichita Times Union Herald.
Hey, that's how political races used to be won. I remember, like, Andrew Jackson, I think they would spread rumors and it would travel like wildfire pre-social media, obviously pre-mass communication. So, yeah, I mean, that's almost like now if you can get away with stuff.
Marketing is marketing.
Yeah, and that's what Mother's doing now. If you look at the poster now, it's the split face, so it's not the angelic full makeup Jennifer Lawrence. It's split half and it has the device.
Their heels right into this, which I, hey, more
and that was a fantastic, I think, Swiss Army Man at Sundance. You thought it was going to be this Robinson Crusoe type movie, Paul Dano stuck on an island, and you listen to this orchestra of Daniel Radcliffe farts for the first 5 minutes of the film. There's VPs of HBO, other folks walking out. Because there's also a conflict of schedules that started late, so it's not just all from the film. But it's those cinematic experiences. You're there with other people. You can decide for yourself, obviously, in your own room or whatever, too, with a screener or whatever. But you're there with the folks. That experience was fascinating. And then so seeing Mother was the same way.
So
it was a great experience just as a moviegoer.
I'm glad that you're including one film that Adam and I think this would be our favorite film we've seen since we've started doing these podcasts about 3 months ago. And it's been a big surprise film to me, and that's Columbus.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, of course, I lived in Columbus for a while. I'm a little prejudiced, and I'm familiar with all of those backdrops they had, which the architecture is a backdrop, but the story itself, I think, it's a slow-moving film, but it's kind of an art house film. But I do think if people sit and pay attention to it, they're really going to like this film.
Yeah, sometimes I hear that term art house film, and I think if there's not clear plot points and things wrapped up in a bow and certain things, I think that's what a lot of movies get pushed aside as an art house film.
Well, give it a chance.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what I'd say with Heartland stuff too. And this is one that I've seen on social media. I mean, most of the time social media, I don't comment a lot of stuff or even read comments because you just get infuriated and realize, hey, I just can't climb up this mountain and stuff right now too. But when people are talking about the success when Columbus hit here locally, there were some folks in the minority like, oh, I don't want to see this movie about architecture. They're like,
it's not really about
architecture. No, it's not. Like, here's a link to this really poignant article about this film, and it's not about that. So it's funny, people just reading headlines and going that way too. But I was super surprised. So again, I saw this film initially on a screener by myself. Thought it was good, but I think seeing it again in that setting, I went to Landmark and saw it with Coconata, the director, in the house, and then also John Cho was there, which was fantastic, and Dan Grossman from Nouveau, their art editor, was there doing the Q&A, so it was a really fantastic night, and seeing that there, you could tell, unlike other movies that are set in Indiana, maybe in the script or book or whatever adaptations that go somewhere else because it's cheaper. And I totally understand that. If you're going to save $10 million, yes, that makes sense to go to another state and recreate whatever. But the fact that Coconata came to Columbus, Indiana, fell in love with the town and fashioned a story around that was fascinating. And John Cho almost got choked up because there was somebody in the audience who said, my mother died in that hospital. So even now I'm thinking about it too. I'm getting a little sentimental. That's powerful.
That's a big part of the story.
And it's not like, hey, this was 5 minutes of Transformers that was filmed on the north whatever side of Indiana. This is a film that meant something to these actors. It was really John Cho's, I think, his defining film as a leading man as well, too. And he had a fantastic story on Fresh Air about this as well. So I think it was fascinating. And I adore the film. I'm glad we can bring it back to Harlan.
So there's a lot of these special presentation films I kind of want to hit on. But sure. The one that I want to talk about next, because some of these I think really could, we could see later on when it comes to Oscar season. And it's happened to you guys years past where some of your films have gone on to get some real awards nationally. But this one really strikes my interest is Breathe for a couple reasons. One, the cast, Andrew Garfield, who kind of has launched into a much more... He went from, you know, Spider-Man and kind of the... We didn't know if he was a good actor to last year between Silence and Hacksaw Ridge, which he got his first Oscar nomination for.
Yep.
And he's teamed up with Claire Foy, who, of course, won an Emmy for The Crown, if you haven't seen it on Netflix.
She was very good in that.
Oh, yeah. And the director, this is interesting for a lot of people... Andy Serkis.
Right.
And if you don't know that name, you have seen him on film before. You just don't realize it.
Yeah.
He is probably one of the most famous motion capture actors.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, did Gollum in the Lord of the Rings films. And then a film we reviewed, The Planet of the Apes.
Right. Caesar.
Yeah. Fantastic. I thought he should have got an Oscar nomination one of the years for his acting as Caesar. And
Tintin with Peter Jackson, Steven Spielberg.
So this is interesting. Is this his first directorial movie?
This is his directorial debut. And the fascinating thing, I actually got to see this film already as well. It's based on a true story. And the thing that you don't see here is that... So the character, Andrew Garfield's character, he gets polio. And this is a time when, obviously, there's no vaccine for polio. And if you were severely disabled, as the term they use in the film, you're pretty much bedridden in a hospital. You don't see your family anymore. You're stuck in this state. And they were really trailblazers and pioneers in that area. So it's this will to live and to fight on and kind of beat the odds. And they really, I won't go into it too much, but they really changed that landscape just where they are and then around the world today. And the amazing thing is that their son in the film is the real-life son of the subjects is the producer of this actual film. So I can only imagine what that process would have been like as well to go through. It's Jonathan Cavendish, who's the producer. So it's unbelievable. But it's a great film. It has Oscar potential written all over it. Great acting performances. And yeah, and Andy Serkis, I mean, his interviews, he's just captivating. He has this dark... kind of British voice and stuff too. You can listen to him forever, and this movie is great. So yeah, that's the special presentation of Bleecker Street Media. They also did Megan Levy, which we gave the Truly Moving Picture Award to. So Heartland, we do the big independent film festival, but we also have an award that we work with studios, and we screen the film, and if it meets the criteria and our jury votes it a yes, then it'll get the Truly Moving Picture Award. So you'll see that logo and a lot of these different things here as well throughout the booklet.
I have a question about your process.
Yes.
And I love to ask this of people who have...
It's just me. I watch all...
Yeah, you do the whole thing all by yourself? Okay.
I will not. Yeah, I'm going to give full credit. Don't worry.
We'll take care of that later. But I want to ask about the selection process, because every film festival goes through this. There are many more...
It's different.
It goes both ways. One, there are many more films that want in that can get in.
Certainly.
And certain films you have to really go out and search for and work to get. So, first of all, tell me about the process of acquiring films, and secondly, talk about the people you have to bring in that actually decide which films get in and which films do not get into this film festival.
Yeah, and so... I started out my career, I went to IU for communication and culture, and now they merged that program with film studies and production with telecom and journalism. Now it's the IU Media School. And so it's fantastic, that and the IU Cinema. IU, I think, is really a neat, fantastic powerhouse for, I think, upcoming for film production and studies and stuff too. So I did that, and I did a couple internships at Disney. Taught myself graphic design, worked for a couple different nonprofits and for-profits, and I became a reviewer with Heartland. I got a ticket to go to the awards party years ago when I was at Conseco Fieldhouse at the time and really got involved there. So eventually volunteered, went to a couple different community screenings, and became a narrative feature reviewer. So they have committees of volunteers. So if you all want to sign up, anybody who's listening, we do kind of a call probably around spring or late winter for that. and it sounds romantic. And you talked about this, you know, loop back to your question about what are people going to get out of this film criticism panel? Because people can say that's good or bad, but how do you vocalize it? How do you put it down on paper? How do you express your thoughts in a way? And again, not just what you personally think, but through the lens of whatever organization you're working for. So Heartland's like, oh, that was a really cool movie. That was like, that was some new filmmaking techniques I've ever seen. Like, well, does it have a story that can resonate with somebody? Maybe, might not be for Heartland, potentially. So you have to go through that lens. Also look at different factors and stuff from the technical side, the cinematography, the directing, the sound editing, everything too. And that's the thing I'll say for independent film. People discount the sound design, not just the music, but the sound design and everything too. So it's like if you make a movie, that's the hardest thing for me. If I wanted to become a director, you might have something that looks good, and you see a lot of first-time filmmakers, oh, I'm just going to do it without sound. I'm going to do kind of a silent thing. And I think that's the reason why. Sound design is crucial. Do it at the beginning of the process compared to the end as well, too. So I became a film reviewer, volunteer film reviewer, and it's panning for gold. So we have this year about 60 people. We have a documentary feature review committee, a narrative feature review committee, and then we have a short film committee. And short films for us are 49 minutes or less. The odds of you getting into the festival with a 49-minute short film are not great, because I think you look at the Oscars, films that are nominated, stuff too. Really the sweet spot, if you can tell a fantastic story anywhere, again, 4 minutes might be a little bit low, but really a sweet spot, really 9 to 12 minutes. Under 20 minutes is great too, but that's what we want to see. A lot of times short films are calling cards for directors. Hey, look what I can do, essentially. But yeah, you can tell a powerful story in that amount of time. And so yeah, we have these volunteer committees that look at these films at the forefront. We have two ex-Microsoft developers that I met that work for the Port Townsend Film Festival. And I met them at a conference last year, and they actually are reviewers for a film festival too. And usually you have these Google Docs, all this crazy documentation. How do you give movies to people? Thousands of movies. They developed almost like a Netflix queue type system where people can go in and rate movies, and once they're ranked three times. So that's the thing. If you're on the first tier, if a movie gets reviewed three times, it goes out of the queue towards the beginning of the process. So every movie will definitely be watched from front to back. That's something we guarantee. A lot of film festivals don't disclose their process. We have it on our website. Hey, this is what we do. We can guarantee your movie's going to be watched all the way through. And if you don't get in the festival, after things are not as crazy, after the festival happens, we will actually send you constructive feedback based on what people have said. And people appreciate that. And if you recut your film, you can resubmit it. And we've had films that have made it in subsequent years from that feedback. Then, again, and when you send out your letters, you might get some not as nice emails as well, which we had.
So how many have you seen of all the movies?
I'm going to give credit where credit is due. I've seen the majority of the feature films. That's kind of my realm.
We would expect you to have to see all of them. Yeah. Just curious.
Yeah. So when it comes to features, again, the film. So really, I would say I'm the gatekeeper. If there's something that I feel is like, hey, I really need another look, I want to make sure that nothing is new, too crazy. So we'll work with our president as well. But I've really been given the freedom really to be the gatekeeper. So a movie might be watched by that initial jury or committee and go up. And then we have interns. We have a kind of a second trusted tier of people that watch the movies. Then it'll go maybe to other staff members and stuff. So your movie, as it goes all the way to the top, might be watched by 10 to 16 different people. And then it might hit my desk. Or if I know a movie a certain way, I might peek in the back end and poke around in a little bit too. Yeah.
All right. Well, I just want to end on kind of something very positive. You're doing a Women in Film panel.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of movies that are directed by women. And that's been something that Hollywood's talked about for a while.
Definitely.
There was a lot of praise for Wonder Woman because I think it was the first big superhero movie directed by a female
director.
Patty
Jenkins, right? Yeah.
And so we've seen a lot of progress there. Mm-hmm. Talk a little about the reasoning of wanting to do this panel and kind of what topics will be hit on and what you kind of hope to.
Yeah, so that's the thing too. And again, going to these conferences, talking with other film festival organizers, you want to honor and showcase the work of people of color, of women, people who don't have a voice within the film festival world as it is. The thing this year, we expanded the number of movies. We look based on quality. And that's kind of a hard pendulum when you have to balance that too. So we looked at the films, we programmed the films too, and we did the count. We were like, we have 75 films directed by women. So that's very exciting. We have this organic, amazing number of films directed by women. So we actually have that listed in our guidebook, every single film. And we actually partnered with Barbara Ann O'Leary, who for years worked doing social media and supporting the IU Cinema. And she has started the Directed by Women kind of global movement. And September is their viewing party. So anywhere around the world, hashtag Directed by Women. So we're working with her. She's going to moderate this panel. And there's past women filmmakers that we've had from different years and different backgrounds, short films, animation, feature films, producer. And Laura Goodnow, actually, she's a Butler grad. And she produced the movie with Karen Allen called Year by the Sea, which is actually opening in theaters, got distribution this week, and it's going to open up at Keystone Arts next week. So she's going to be on the panel too. So it's amazing. These movies that come through are from all over the world. This might be the only time you get to see them. So there are films, documentaries that have social impact as well. So a lot of people come out just because they want to see a film about this topic. But for all those listeners out there, come and see these movies because this is their theatrical run. The filmmakers are excited. You might never see them again. And if they go on to distribution, that's fantastic. And we share the word through Heartland's means.
I have one last question.
Yeah.
You and Adam have something very important in common, and that is you're both are graduates of the Hamilton County Leadership Academy. I'd like each of you to tell me what you got out of that.
Oh, so I'm a class member now. So,
oh, you're in it
so
now.
I'm in it now.
Excuse me. Okay, you're not a graduate, you're in it. So what have you learned so far?
I've only had the retreat. So there are monthly meetings or classes, and I have to miss the first two, which is the maximum you can miss because of Heartland. It was the announcement party day and then opening night. So
yeah, those are things that are hard for you to miss. So
I will still make it, but you work with other community leaders and you learn about your not only on a personal level, but again, I think the retreat, you learn about personality types and kind of dig deeper into who you are. And then you actually learn about the other people in the community, these other leaders, and that way too, and learn about different things from civic topics through social topics, things that are just in your community that you might not think of. But something I will tell you is that I thought a lot of people have the stereotype of a Hamilton County that it might be super white bread. It's just not a lot of diversity, a lot of rich people. It is the most affluent county in Indiana. But there's amazing history in Hamilton County, especially African-American history, too. So I learned some neat stories, too. And I asked a question from one of the historians, and people were like, oh, are you going to make a movie about that? And I was like, I like movies. I'm not a movie maker yet by any means, too. I wrote an awful coming-of-age screenplay at IU, which we won't discuss any further. But, no, I haven't made it since 60mm stuff. But the funniest thing, too, I will say, too, we learned about the great squirrel stampede of 1822. That will make a fantastic short film. So, hey, someday, filmmakers out there, great squirrel stampede of 1822. Just a bunch of squirrels that ran through Hamilton County in Indianapolis for no one knows why.
Yeah, but I do recommend it as a program. You learn a lot about the county, and
yes.
I think it's a really great experience. Now, I know we got to go. There's so many films that we didn't get to talk about.
Sure.
So we just want to list some of the names of some of the big names that know that'll be involved in things at the festival. People like, and I'm going to start listing names that I see.
Go for
you
it.
Jump in, yeah, too, with names you know off the top of your head. Miles Teller, Amy Schumer.
Thank You for Your Service, which is a DreamWorks special presentation.
We've got Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Documentary about him, so he's more than a talking head.
Bill Pullman, Jim Caviezel, Peter Fonda. Mm-hmm. Peter Fonda.
All in the Battle of Lefty Brown with A24.
What are some of the other big names?
Willem Dafoe is in
Willem
Florida
Dafoe.
Project. A24. Again, A24, we had a room that opened the festival a few years ago. They had Moonlight, which won last year. Should have gotten a little bit more credit, I guess, at the end, too. But yeah, they are an amazing distributor. They have films that only are kind of Oscar quality, but are also great conversation pieces, like A Ghost Story from David Lowery recently, too.
Let me wrap this up by asking you, where do you find the website?
Heartlandfilm.org or heartlandfilmfestival.org, too. Tickets are on sale. For a limited time, we have 10 packs of tickets, so it's $12 per standard ticket at the box office. If you buy a 10-pack of vouchers online, you can save $20. And again, things are selling out. They're the new fancy leather seats at AMC, Castleton, and Traders Point. Also have 3 days at the IMA. So we had 118 sellouts out of almost 300 slots last year. We weren't expected to have more. And we haven't talked about, we have 16 premiere films this year too. Mm-hmm. And not all of them, because we didn't have enough slots per se, but a lot of them will have a premiere screening where tickets are $20 and then there's an after party. So definitely come check that out. We have amazing films that deal, I guess, I'm a big advocate for civil rights. We have a movie about Marvin Booker, so before Trayvon Martin, and a lot of these things that are sadly so common. Martin
Booker.
And
what about Ferguson as well, right?
Yeah, we have a film, Show Me Democracy, yes, which is about people, which again is very relevant now with St. Louis and what's going on. A film about Perry Wallace, which is a premiere, Triumph, the Untold Story of Perry Wallace. He was the first African-American athlete to break the color barrier in the Southeastern Conference, the SEC, mm-hmm, for Vanderbilt. Yes, there are a lot of great films. Again, I wish I could go through page by page with everybody.
Speaking of pages, where do you find those brochures?
So the brochure is here, 172 pages plus the pullout. You can get that at AMC Castleton, AMC Traders Point, and the Heartland Film Office down in Fountain Square. And
I'll keep a few at Donatello's too. So sure, if you come by, I'll have a handful there for people to pick up.
Yeah. And yeah, and our Fountain Square as well as our office, and we're going to have our Glow Awards party there, give away $100,000 in cash prizes. We've given them more cash than any other film festival in North America, and it's going to be a great night. But
yeah, I've seen filmmakers who have all these trophies, and yeah, if you can give them some cash, they definitely appreciate that.
And the thing, too, I'll mention is that two of our big winners who have won cash have gone on their next projects, have premiered at Cannes. Mm. So that's huge. Though some of Heartland money has gone on to this international
and accolade. Cannes is probably the preeminent film festival, sure, in the world.
Yeah.
Well, Greg Sorvig, the director of film programming and marketing for the Heartland Film Festival, it was our great. Hamilton County goes to the movies. Thanks, Greg Sorvig of the Heartland Film Festival. This year's event appears to be the biggest and best festival yet. Find out more about this year's Heartland Film Festival at heartlandfilm.org or call them at 317-464-9405. If you enjoy our podcast, spread the word. Pass along our podcast and links on social media. Also, Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. It's available on iTunes. Just search for the phrase podcast by Larry Lannon and take a moment to rate our podcast on iTunes. Adam and I return next week from Donatello's Restaurant. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.